Hello and welcome to Simplified, the podcast where we are a bunch of sports who don't play any sports, but today we'll be discussing about sports, especially in the era of the pandemic. I am Tony and joining me is...
Srikeet, hi. Hi everyone. Naren was with us briefly, but has, due to technical difficulties, forcibly has had to leave. Because of dodgy internet connection in Maladis.
Yes.
And which I was very familiar with. So, I mean, the only reason I have been able to successfully do this remotely for this while is because I have second world internet connection. at least, this is what we define Malaysia as, second world. It's not first world, it's not third world, somewhere in the middle.
Yeah.
So, Tony, what is the...
We were actually trying to connect on this podcast for about 23 minutes and getting frustrated while all of us were ready to record, like four of us, which includes one person we haven't introduced yet. But in some sense, it's a perfect metaphor for what is happening in the world of sports right now. The players are ready and raring to go, but technical difficulties are keeping them off the field, which is what we'll discuss. So since Naren couldn't join us, we've got in an expert for you, who is Srinath Sripath. And, you know, since I'm too lazy to research for the episode, we roped Srinath in and he'll do his own introduction because I'm too lazy to do that also.
As we do from time to time with Simplified, where when we get too lazy to research, we get people who are much smarter than ourselves and much more qualified to talk about topics to come and do the talking for us. And welcome, Srinath.
Thanks, Srikit. Disclaimer upfront, I'm no expert, but upfront, I'm basically a Man United fan for the last two decades and counting, which is not really an easy thing to admit these days. I've been in the digital space for a while now.
That's how you and I met, no? In a Manchester United fans support group post the Alex
era. Yeah, I'm sure it's not. It's the supporters club has now become a support group.
Yeah, they're all in solidarity with each other now these days. But
I'm particularly joyful as the Liverpool fan in the room.
Oh,
wait.
Please continue.
Still haven't won the title.
I mean. Positives to the pandemic, Liverpool's whatever title charge has at least been delayed. Anyway, so the reason I'm here is because I've been in the digital space for a while, and I used to work with the Tata Group long time ago, and I pivoted into the sports world. Spent like three really great years working for Cricinfo. The fitting thing about this podcast is I used to host one, and technical difficulties are absolutely old story to me. I've done like
See,
a bunch of podcasts.
Not just in sports, in technical difficulties also. We pick our guests very wisely.
Then. Yeah. those who feel our pain.
Yeah, absolutely. So right now I... work for the Olympic Games. So Tony basically thinks I'm expert enough to offer my take on sports during this whole quarantine era. So let's crack on.
Yeah, you work for the Olympic Games, man. Like, can't get
I know.
Expert.
The closest I've ever done is wake up at like 5 in the morning to watch like Abhinav Bindra like shoot some targets from a distance.
By the way, Srinath has also produced the best, I would say, Indian-based sports podcast episode during the World Cup last year, which was also done remotely.
Fabulous.
The scene is on one, Srinath.
Yeah. Didn't involve me, but I did my bit in producing it for the world.
Yeah,
you'll find the link to this episode in our description.
Yeah.
Woot woot.
Absolutely.
Anything for some stump mic pimping anywhere. Happy.
So, Srinath, what sports are you watching these days?
Oh, I was actually watching some marble racing on YouTube for a while.
Oh my God, Yellen marble racing. That is my new fascination as well. That is fantastic. Go ahead.
No, it is absolutely fabulously done by that guy. I mean, it's so well produced. The commentary is great. So I was watching marble racing for the longest time during this pandemic. Yeah. But otherwise, just binging on Roe Belinda 2's library, which for non-cricket fans is almost like a video archive of cricket history and all the great moments. But yeah, the Bundesliga is back, so silver linings, etc.
Fantastic. So a side note to everyone, the Yeller's Marble Racing, we strongly recommend checking it out. It's basically marble racing mocked up to feel like Grand Prix. And that's the Easter egg in that is that it's the next season of Yeller's Marble Racing is going to be sponsored by Last Week Tonight by John Oliver.
Whoa, I didn't know that.
Yeah, yeah. So they were actually going out of business. So he actually covered that in his last episode. And they were going out of they didn't have enough money to kind of do this further. So John Oliver, Last Week Tonight and John Oliver have sponsored them for a whole season. So they'll have all the money to do everything next season.
John Oliver is basically literally ensuring the world doesn't lose its marbles.
Yeah. No, he's basically like what do we say, bookworm Santa.
Yeah, so I think we should just go around the table reminiscing our favorite sports watching memory. I'm sure this can be a podcast episode on its own. Maybe one day it will be. What's Srikit, what was your favorite?
Yes, so this is, just generally, or are we talking about live?
Yeah, let's go with live, no?
Because live as in in-person live, in the stadium or?
In the stadium. Let's go.
In the stadium. Well, I think Tony, you and I share that memory. Because this is, to be honest, I haven't really experienced a lot of very great live sport. But the one thing that we did watch, which was pretty iconic, actually, if you take the context of Indian sporting history, is that Tony, I and a bunch of friends watched the first IPL final together. At ISL, oh my God, the first ISL final, Indian Super League, which is soccer, the first football final together in D.Y. Patil Stadium in Navi Mumbai. And it was a pretty dreary final, to be very honest. In fact, that's what I was actually thinking, that it is probably the worst way a final can end, because it was nil-nil at 90 minutes.
Yeah.
And almost heading towards nil-nil after the end of extra time. And what you would hope is, okay, if a match even ends nil-nil after extra time, at least you get the thrill of watching penalties, which was also robbed from us by a last-minute scruffy goal by ATK, who snatched the title right at the very end. But it was quite an experience to watch the first ISL champions being crowned. And ATK really never turned back since. So that was pretty special when you think back about it in retrospect.
Yeah, in fact, my memory also involves the Kerala Blasters. actually, in the season one, when the stadium experience was next level. So that's when in Cochin, I think that's one of the must-watch stadium experiences which is there. And actually, Kerala Blasters, they play in yellow and they're referred to as the Dortmund of the East, like the German club. But, one thing that is there is, you know how in the West, the fans wave around scarves, right?
Right.
In Kerala, the equivalent would be like a towel. And Dortmund, and the towel in Malayalam is called a Dortmund. So,
well,
fabulous.
Well
yeah. No, so, but here's a interesting bit of my personal connection with Kerala Blasters, particularly, is that they had a film that Ogilvy had made, which was the whole, I don't know if you remember this, Tony, there was a film about the Kerala Blasters, or everyone standing in front of the TV and telling them how to play.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, a whole bunch of people, there's a montage of that. That was done by Ogilvy, and I was actually writing the case for that. So so when I wrote the case for that, this thing, I was actually covering a whole bunch of, so I had all the stadium attendances, I had all the primary data from this, and it was, in fact, I had come out with a data, stat point at that point, that it was the seventh highest average attendance that season, where Kerala Blasters came to the final. Was the seventh highest average attendance in the world. Wow. Was Kerala Blasters among all the football, across all the major footballing leagues in the world. Okay. Higher than even I think Manchester United, higher than even Arsenal and stuff like that.
It's a crazy experience. Whenever the world goes back to normal, and if Kerala Blasters still exists, please fly down to Cochin to watch that.
Well, that's definitely a part of the Anfield first, but then maybe then Kerala Blasters.
Poor man's Anfield.
Well, yeah. Anna Field is at least at the very minimum.
Srinath, what's yours?
Yeah, so since you asked me about this, I've been thinking about it. There's quite a few, one of which involves traveling to Old Trafford to watch Scholes after he retired in a sort of like off-season charity game. But the memory that kind of comes to mind first is I was in 11th standard and taking one of my first long train journeys from Trichy, where we used to live, and to Chennai. So around 11 in the night, I boarded the wrong train. I was alone. And at 1 a.m., I was forced to switch trains, etc., etc. The whole point being to go and watch Brian Lara live for the first time. And this was really close to the time that he retired. So this game in Chennai, India, I don't think Dhoni played that game, but like all the big guns were playing the big four. I remember, I think there was... I don't know if it was... Yeah, Sachin played, Dravid played, whatever. The point being that Lara absolutely smashed India in that game, and it was totally worth boarding the wrong train and going to Chennai for in the middle of the night.
This is why we classify you as an expert, because you went to watch a match in which India is playing to watch Brian Lara, not...
Oh my God, yeah. He's classic KCC, no? Knowledgeable Chennai crowd.
The point is, I had already watched Sachin and all that, but Lara was, there was like stories about him about to retire and everything. It was literally 4 or 5 months before he played his last international game. So like totally, totally worth going and watching him, even if it meant India lost that one.
So Lara was basically close to his end. So it was like watching Lara's craft in Tomb Raider.
Oh my God, Tony.
I think it's time to the episode.
Yes, I think that's a good enough bridge to move on.
Yeah, so all of this great memories of sport remain memories for the time being, because we've been robbed of it pretty much during this pandemic. But, there was this column from Jorge Valdano, former Real Madrid coach, and also the guy who scored in 1986 finals when Argentina won. And I am referencing this particular goal because in the last episode, we spoke about births triggered by goal celebrations. I did some calculations, and it is highly likely that his goal in the World Cup final in 86 is what produced me. So, but essentially, when the world has been robbed of sport, he basically, spoke about how people are lamenting there being no sport by saying how essential it is that, sport doesn't exist because there are more important things at stake. And basically, he said about the story of a sailor who leaps into the sea to save a drowning child. And a week later, a woman approaches him and asks, "Are you the man who saved my son?" And he says, yes, madam. And she's like, oh, then you are the man I'm looking for. Where is the boy's cap? So essentially, with full cognizance that Spot is like that cap, we shall get into the serious business of Spot, because it's honestly like the best substitute for, you know, all the tensions, right? Like if you want to pick a fight with someone, pick it over Spot. The best equivalent that you can, or substitute that you can think of for war, for political support, for anything else is Spot. And also it's a fairly large industry, because at an annual level, it's worth $756 billion. To put that in context, that's like five times what the movie industry is worth. So all of this has come to a standstill pretty much. And interestingly, that does not just refer to pro sports, which is about $171 billion, but also sports retail, all your clubs and gyms and other sports facilities, and other infrastructure, for F&B, and also most importantly, betting, which I guess you can still do on marble racing, but it's just not mainstream enough to produce that kind of revenue. So all of this has come to a standstill, and we are obviously not economics experts, but we want to look at what changes will happen whenever sports returns, whether that's with respect to rules, fitness, new business models, health, all of these things, right? So we'll do the usual simplified thing and try to give some interesting insights. Srinath is obviously the expert here, and he will reveal to you some things that hopefully you might not already know. So with that, let's get started. Primarily, first, let's talk about how the health and fitness itself has changed. And our listeners will not know this, but Srinath is also an expert on health and fitness, because he was one of the first, possibly the only podcast host to actually do the yo-yo test in a real setting.
I was told...
What is the yo-yo test, Tony? Can you just explain that?
Yeah, Srinath, why don't you tell me?
I'll go for it, yeah. So basically, this whole controversy was happening about how, I think it was Yuvraj Singh who didn't clear the yo-yo test. The yo-yo test is basically, I think you run a 10-meter distance back and forth and you're timed on it. And there are various beeps to measure it, which means that the beep frequency keeps getting faster and you're supposed to keep running and covering this distance. And there are various measurements for it. I think there's a 17.9 or 18, which is what the usual criteria is. But forget all that. Basically, the idea was to show how difficult it is to do the yo-yo test. So they put Sean Tate, who was a Cricinfo expert at that time, and he was watching a bunch of us plebs run around. And at the end of it, he basically said, you have the cardiac fitness of a golfer or a PlayStation cricketer. So that's how it ended.
Like what a troll that is, no? Like, we often say, like, oh, why don't you come and play the sport to critics and all of that. But he actually could do that. You were like expert sitting in one corner talking about how sports should be played, and he's like, come down, do the yo-yo test.
and he didn't run, no? He just like sat down and he was sledging full time like a proper Aussie. So
sauntered.
Yeah.
Yeah, but fitness has become extremely important over the years. And how are essentially sports people expected to keep fit? I think one reference point that we can readily use is The Last Dance, which I'm guessing most of us have watched during the lockdown. And you know how Michael Jordan actually took a break in between to go play baseball and come back, and how jaded he looked that season. So it's not easy by any means to get back into peak physical condition and resume from where you left off, especially since, you know, all of these training facilities, etc., shut down. So, yeah, let's talk about fitness. Any thoughts, Srinath, on how people are actually managing in this sort of pandemic situation?
Yeah, I have like a few random assorted thoughts. The first of which being, I think one of India's under 19 World Cup stars, Ravi Bishnoi, I think the guy who lit up the final, he gave an interview at Cricinfo this week, and he said that not all people have the necessary fitness equipment at home, and he's been lifting an LPG cylinder to keep fit. Yeah, so like it's completely different based on your stature and where you are in terms of your career. A lot of cricketers have underground gyms. I think football, I mean, basement gyms, I should say. And in terms of football, what's been happening is they've been saying you need to train for 4 weeks at least before you play a competitive game. And if you've been watching the Bundesliga, the first weekend felt like people were kind of relatively casual. It was not peak football as we know it. They were taking it a little easy, and obviously it's a contact sport. But they've been training for 4 weeks before the first game, and that's what all leagues are going to do. And Tony, like, what you mentioned is absolutely true, because one of the teams, I don't know where it is. I think it is, I think it's in France. There's one team that was training behind closed doors, and somebody shot a video because they were all supposed to be home in quarantine. And that video went viral, and other teams in the league started protesting, saying like, you can't be training now, you've been caught red-handed. Give them like point bans and talk them whatever penalties based on this and stuff. So it's extremely, extremely essential to train for at least a few weeks before it resumes, whenever it resumes.
Who would have thought that 2020 is finally the year where fat shaming goes away and fit shaming is a thing?
Very true. Yeah.
Wearing masks is like the thing to endorse, whereas doing CrossFit is basically like frowned down upon.
Yeah, I mean, as a reference point, I mean, so here in KL, I live in an area with a lot of expats around here. So, and a lot of them are American and European expats. And so, I mean, when the lockdown here was announced, and the lockdown here was pretty strict. So when it was announced here, the expats, always the number one people with fitness, a lot of them decided to continue with their evening jogs outside. And there was like front page news everywhere that 10 expat joggers arrested around Mount Kiara. And there were cops especially like hanging around the entire area around jogging times early in the morning and in the evening, looking for people who are trying to jog in this time to arrest them.
Wow.
So, yeah, it truly is where now fitness is being prosecuted.
Yeah, but seriously crazy times. In I think one thing that Srinath touched upon is that it actually disproportionately affects, poorer people. And anyone who's trying to break into that pro circuit will find it extremely difficult.
Right? Yeah.
Also the young, for whom sports is not just about keeping fit, it's how, they expend their energy and socialize and build teams and, build character and all of those. Everything has just gone away. And especially in the Olympics, right? Because realistically, the Olympics has been postponed, and for many, I think athletes, one Olympics is pretty much all they get. And that's what they would have been preparing for a very, very long time. So I'm not sure if there's something in the when the Olympics will happen itself is not determined. Does the composition of the athletic group that represents a nation change after the pandemic? Who knows?
Yeah. So basically, in terms of rules, I think they've said about 57% of the athletes are already qualified. I think there are about 11,000 athletes from around the world who typically compete in Olympic Games. And I think for now they've said that all these guys will get to keep their places if you've already qualified. But the interesting stat that I was reading was until the 90s, the Summer and Winter Olympics used to happen at the same time. So essentially, right now there's a 2-year gap, but before it was not so. So I think between 92 and 94, the Olympic cycle changed. And athletes who go to one Winter Olympics I think the less than 28 or 30% of people actually get to compete in the next one. And it varies like widely from sport to sport. So, for example, in table tennis, which is relatively a less athletic sport compared to, say, a 100 meter running, a lot more people in table tennis compete across multiple Olympics. Maybe some of them do even three games easily. Whereas for other more demanding sports, the number is, you know, less than 20%. So 1 year in terms of elite athletic ability is actually quite a long time. And imagine there are, there are 40 plus year olds competing. And for them, that's
and, and I can almost feel for those 40 plus year olds or late 30s or some people who are probably qualified for the Olympics only at the fag end of their career. Mary Kom, like in the last Olympics, being one of the examples of that, where even though she was like this five-time boxing champion, only qualified for the, I mean, her I mean, women's boxing was only introduced in a couple of Olympics ago. And that's why she could finally qualify and participate in the Olympics for that. And I mean, a situation like that for any other athlete would be really devastating, a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity being robbed like that.
Yeah, it's the wrong kind of unboxing video.
God.
Sorry.
Oh my God.
But one of the things that is allied to this fitness and also something else that I read, a combination of the two would lead to basically next Olympics being probably one where no records are broken. And let me just put that into context, because there's this book which is a highly recommended read called The Sports Gene by David Epstein, where he basically talks about, the entire book talks about whether it's nature or nurture that determines a sports person. One very interesting thing there was he spoke about the big bang of sports body types. So till about the 60s or 70s, everyone basically played the sport they liked, right? So if you looked at the type of bodies that were there in sports, you would find an assortment. But eventually, sports science got to a point where they could predict, you know, what kind of abilities make you more successful in a particular sport. And I think Australia is one country that did this very extensively, where they had, they have a lot of outdoor sports, obviously, but how and no, you know, cold climates. But applying this science, they basically picked body types who were already playing different sports and put them in Winter Olympics. And they started winning and breaking all the records. So the upshot of all this is that by now, all of the body types across different sports have stabilized. So there is a specific body type that will, you know, win you a medal in gymnastics versus, I don't know, cricket versus boxing versus basketball. And everyone picks the sport they will excel at, which means that the number of world records that are being broken will reduce at a steady clip. And if you throw in the, you know, lack of fitness angle or lack of training angle also, I guess next Olympics is the most boring. I'm sorry, Srinath. It's the one that you're working towards, but...
actually, there have been a couple of really interesting experiments, right? So, I don't know if you guys have watched it, but there was this fairly viral live video with three pole vault champions competing in their backyards, right? So, right. I think there's a 5.1 meter mark or whatever. So these guys were asked to clear it in a rapid fire series, because it's a sport where you need equipment and you can compete wherever. The conditions are largely the same unless there's like crazy wind or whatever. So there's this Olympic record holder, there's a world record holder, and this other guy who's supposed to be the emerging young star of it. And these guys were basically clearing their last Olympic or last world championships mark really, really easily. But obviously, there are other factors that will come in, like pressure, you're rusty in competition and all of that. But basically, if that video is to be believed, I think athletes are doing okay.
Right. Okay. Yeah, no, but there is that one point about how, I mean, yeah, of course, there is athletes who are, I've seen this video of an Olympic swimmer who is trying to like keep up with his regimen by tying like a bungee cord to his back and swimming inside a kiddie pool. So he was just trying to practice to like kind of get himself up with the resistance and stuff. And he was like swimming at full tilt inside a kiddie pool with his bungee cord strapped to his back. So it was pretty intense to see. So I mean, of course, there are many attempts to maintain fitness. But the one thing that I mean, at least with competitive sports, and when you reference the Bundesliga, with competitive sports, what's being noticed is that either the theories are that either the entire competitive sport will have its standard reduced, so you will still have the level of competitiveness because everyone's at the same level of rustiness effectively. But there is another school which says, so if, especially again referencing the Bundesliga, the first couple of rounds of football that have happened, we've seen, of course, Haaland and other attackers who have like started scoring just like things were never, stopped ever. But what a lot of people are noticing the trends of is that defenders are actually, the standard of defending has been pretty poor overall. So what seems to have been affected is not, always it's been that defending is not really a very physical aspect. Like the physical aspect doesn't make that big a difference. But what seems to have been impacted is the concentration. So the because you're in the groove, and athletes, especially footballers, have had that cycle of having to play for a certain period of time, stopping at exactly one point, taking a summer break and then getting back to preseason, having been interrupted in this way in this middle, even though for a short duration with the in the case of the Bundesliga, has affected the mental mental abilities and the mental ability to focus and the discipline of certain athletes. And I think that might play a big part in especially with athletes in the next Olympics. I mean, this is my theory, of course. This is something I was reading up, and I think may play a big part of, about just the disruption, about the fact that, yeah, you have to practice in, I mean, for however dedicated that might approach look like, there is probably not a replacement for a swimmer to train in his Olympic sized pool versus training with a bungee cord in a kiddie pool, right?
Correct.
So it does. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, interestingly, like, at least when we spoke about Australia and all, how they have like very professional programs, the pandemic has actually given India scouting opportunities where one person actually cycled 1200 kilometers to get back to their home. And ministers woke up and said, why don't we give them a trial in sports?
this is like that, what was that guy who was running with the Jallikattu, bro?
Yeah.
In the Karnataka runner, right?
Yeah. So maybe it'll lead to a more level playing field where, countries with less infrastructure actually do better in comparison, because everyone's training has now been reduced to whatever kiddie pools there are. But yeah, fitness we'll know only as things come about. But some things are already changing or have changed. Those are the rules wherever sports have restarted. And I think the funniest sort of headline that came up in a newspaper, I think a month and a half ago, with absolutely no context, you saw this headline, which was, saliva is must and Vaseline is no replacement, says Ashish Nehra.
Fantastic. Oh my God. Nehra is still living off that 6 for 23 for his entire life. He won't eat.
He discovered fitness late, actually, but what a star performer he was. But interestingly, this was about one of the most fundamental things about cricket and fast bowling, especially in tests, is about using the condition of the ball and how you shine and polish and rough up one side and keep the other side smooth. That itself is now under question because, can you use saliva, etc., is under consideration. And I think, Srinath, correct me if I'm wrong, they are looking at using Vaseline.
Yeah, I think I also read somewhere that thing is Kookaburra, who are producing some sort of I don't know what sticky substance it is. some sort of gel that'll so to make things simpler. But what'll be funny is if ball tampering is made legal 2 years after three guys were banned a year for it. Right?
Literally they are spitballing with the rules. other interesting changes in rules which we've already seen, I think in the Bundesliga now there can be 5 substitutes instead of 3.
That's what they're going to cascade that across all the other leagues as well.
Yeah, which is like a big thing, right? Like it changes very several dynamics of the game. Like you can basically do tactical substitutions in the scheme.
Yeah, it's effectively, I mean, it's much more like, I mean, American sports have fundamentally always been like this unlimited substitution kind of play. It's across baseball, football, hockey, basketball, everywhere as they've got unlimited substitution. So what that does is it allows you to like, almost build teams within your team where you have like, I have a team for a specific situation. I have another team for another specific situation. And the two extra substitutes almost makes that, allows you to do that. You can change your entire midfield and part of your attack with that. Three subs was very limited, but now you have that ability to play a little bit more and take a few more risks, because if the substitution doesn't pay off or whatever, or you risk putting on a keeping an injured player on, you always have the ability to sub them off later. So it does change the dynamic of the game quite significantly.
Yeah. And what's happened interestingly during this whole hiatus for India specifically is that Dhoni has not yet retired. So,
oh my God.
That whole saga has just been pushed away. And I think, you know, Mother Nature will get him before he actually ever retires. But one sport that may not actually return is tennis. Because while cricket and definitely football can be played within, without international players or within countries through leagues, etc., tennis circuit is largely driven by touring different countries and stuff like that, right? And I think as things stand, one whole year looks like it'll go away. Of course, there was the famous Wimbledon pandemic insurance which paid out, which was a massive deal for them. I think they were paying a crazy amount for over a decade, and it paid off in about 15 or 16 multiples, right?
We're talking about millions of dollars.
That's a premium worth paying, totally. In retrospect.
Go ahead.
No, just as an aside to what you were saying on tennis, it's interesting how you're saying that tennis is going to be the most impacted sport. While, just using Malaysia as an example, because here now in Malaysia, overall the number of cases have gone down, and we are in what is called a conditional lockdown. So there are a lot of things that are now allowed, and you can do fitness, you can go out, people are allowed to go out a little bit. From a sporting point of view, the only sports that are allowed are jogging and running, and tennis, because tennis is the sport itself is fairly non-contact.
So that is the only. No?
Yeah.
And golf, of course, yes, golf. But I mean, I'm saying of sports that people usually participate in.
Yeah.
As such. And with golf, actually, the reason why I don't think golf is on the permitted list is because you need to open up a golf course for that, which requires a whole bunch of staff to be there.
Yeah.
And that is not still permitted. So that's why I don't know if the courses are open yet. But tennis, because the tennis courts are around and all that, so tennis courts are the only fitness avenues opened. But on a personal level, there's tennis happening. But on a tour level, tennis is suffering.
Yeah, that's an interesting dynamic, no? I think that will be probably the only sport where the professional thing can't happen, but the amateur thing will. I think in Australia also they said you can resume playing tennis, but only singles, no doubles or mixed doubles. And very interestingly, they had clear rules saying you can't touch each other's balls. You have to mark your balls with a specific...
Tony, if he was still referring back to our prediction episode, this actually lends itself to an interesting hypothetical where you might be like if the coronavirus pandemic continues for a few more years, the amateur game will get much better, but the professional game will deteriorate quite significantly.
But professional tennis also, several other things change, right? For instance, one of the things that keep happening and is taken for granted is like ball boys and towel handlers and like spit and sweat and all of that. So at a professional level, I'm not sure if you put in towel racks or something, but it's not something.
You think about it. I mean, for of course, tennis is all about the play and all that stuff, but even the simple traditions of tennis where you find like an athlete walking back after winning a point, wiping the sweat off his face and then throwing the towel to a ball boy. These actions are probably pretty much history for at least a couple of years, maybe, even if the pandemic passes.
Yeah, so I mean, not just Dhoni, Federer also looks like he might be in trouble. On the other hand, it might give like opportunities for anyone who was nursing an injury to come back into...
Very much so.
Yeah, win a Grand Slam.
Yeah, so in fact, that's another interesting one where there was, I mean, it wasn't a very significant injury, but Liverpool goalkeeper Alisson was injured for, he had like a pretty serious hamstring injury, which had just begun, which was why he wasn't playing in the last Champions League game against Atletico Madrid. So he was nursing that injury and it seemed to have, would have kept him out for at least a couple of months. He has exactly those couple of months have been in the lockdown and he has immediately returned just now when the training has begun again, he's returned back to training as normal. Wow. So he's literally missed no games in a 2 month injury period.
Yeah. Amazing.
Sorry to segue, but the whole Federer topic brought to mind one of the big sort of positives from this pandemic, if we can say so, is basically sports people opening up in ways in which you didn't know they could from TV interviews and whatever else you saw in the media. Basically, like before this, Federer would win some game, he'd be sweating and he'd be interviewed for 20 seconds and then he'll go off, he'll say some funny things and it'll go off. But right now, with players having all the time in the world, and I say this across sports, I have immensely enjoyed some of the interviews that cricketers and tennis players have been doing off each other. They seem to have like such great stories to tell now that they've got absolutely all the time in the world and no training to go to or sports to play. I think that's been like brilliant to watch sports people open up. I think there was this video, I think, of, I don't know if it is Aguero. Yeah, Aguero is basically doing an Insta Live. And he was, I think he called Lionel Messi in the middle of it. And for us to even be able to watch this live is something that you wouldn't have thought would have been possible.
When you mentioned Aguero, I think one of the more incredible things that he was doing was, I think on the Manchester City YouTube channel, Aguero was hosting minor lessons to teach kids Spanish. So he was literally hosting like webisodes teaching people how to speak Spanish.
Even Federer and Nadal came together to
There's that comment of Murray's that went viral, right? Like Nadal was trying to get Federer for the longest time on his Insta Live and Murray says can win 52 French Open titles but doesn't know to press a button or whatever.
Amazing.
Fabulous.
Also, like, you know, other sports stars, like all these social media challenges, of course, but David Warner on TikTok has been such a...
Yeah, man.
I've not been following. So what has he been up to?
David Warner is the new TikTok sensation. He basically does multiple TikTok videos with his family, his wife and kids.
They'll put on Telugu song and they'll dance. Yeah. That's what they're doing.
Yeah. Sunrises full on. But also many, many videos. But the point is that before the pandemic, no one would have said David Warner is a lovable guy. But now when you see, you know, actual like real human side, it's a completely different dynamic. I think that's it's fair to say that the one thing that no one's missed during the pandemic is platitudes in sports. Like night areas and stuff like that.
Boys played well.
So, no, the one thing, that this is actually quite an interesting series of instances. I mean, how sports persons who are so locked into their craft, I mean, to be perform at that level, you have to be pretty single-minded and block out all the noise. But in a situation that we are in right now, they are actually allowing the noise come in. And you are actually seeing so many facets of these sports persons. Like, I'm very into the world of football. So there is someone like Gary Neville, who is normally he's very strong opinions about football. So he's very strongly into the world of football. But because of the lack of football, he's actually had really strong opinions on the political stuff that's happening in the UK and how the politics has been negative and all that. And he's been one of the leading voices as a commentator. You have Jurgen Klopp reading children's comic books out loud on YouTube so that kids can read. Like, he read a comic book about Kenny Dalglish for little kids. And he's like, and he was doing these Zoom interviews and all that. And he's talking about how he's been following up a lot about the world and reading up so much about opinions. And he's reading Twitter and stuff like that, which he's been staunchly against, saying, I'm not going to go on social media. But in this space, what does a football coach do? I mean, at least the players can keep fit at their own house. The football coach has literally nothing to do. So, I mean, you're actually seeing a whole facet of the a new facet of a lot of these sports persons now, and them kind of exploring areas of their life which they've never done before.
Yeah, it's like a semi-retirement or early retirement, right? And keep talking about how so many books will be written during the pandemic. I think we can safely say that almost every sports person will have a biography by the end of an autobiography.
Or at the very minimum, a chapter in their final autobiography about this particular period.
Yeah. Okay, quickly moving on to just on this final thing, right? On the rules, when contact sports are introduced, I find it a little funny that, like, you know, you have celebrations in football where they maintain social distancing, etc. And Megan Rapinoe basically said, like, you know, what is the big deal about handshakes and high fives? We are going to be sweating all over each other all game. Exactly. So it sort of defeats the purpose, right? So it's more like posturing rather than...
The most ridiculous one though is the Premier League suggestion. So some Premier League official made a suggestion saying that, well, they were talking about tackling in football, right? And tackling is full contact. People get really close to each other. They probably sweat all each other. They bump all kinds of body parts against each other. I mean, it's tackling. It's contact, right? So they were initially thinking about removing tackling altogether, but then later they said, okay, you can put tackling in one. Very, very brilliant official, clearly who has never played the sport of football in his life, suggested they can tackle, but they should just turn their faces away from each other when they tackle.
Good luck defending corners now.
Yeah. So that's what they're going to do, is that they're going to go in two-footed on a tackle, just turn their faces away.
So, but basically this COVID situation is one where literally defense is the best form of offense. So, if you like just get in someone's face and I can't contact them.
No, I mean, you have a legit case of, so if you go in for a dangerous tackle and you make a dangerous tackle and the referee is about to show you a red card, you can just say, bro, I wasn't looking, man. I was told not to.
Yeah, they didn't think this through. Yeah. But another aspect of sport that has definitely changed or will in the medium term is lots of sports will happen behind closed doors, obviously, because TV is still mainstream. But it's quite surreal, no, to watch these sports without audiences. You can obviously hear a lot of things off the benches in football, etc. But it definitely detracts from the atmosphere, in my opinion.
Oh, for sure. Srinath, what is the inside scoop about how Tokyo 2020 to be held in 2021 will be like without spectators?
If I call it inside scoop, it'll be like wild speculation. But what I'm kind of seeing across sports is like there's a lot of preparation for, I think, some members who are influential in the Olympic world who make decisions. A lot of them have been talking about setting October 2020 as the point when they start exploring these options. Like, that seems to be the point where they start thinking about various scenarios based on where the pandemic is. Because, like, one point that is being made is that in Brazil today, there are 10,000 cases. So while it's still, like, raging like this, there's no point literally speculating about something that is 14 months away or whatever. But like, right, one thing that we're seeing across sports is that because of the point Tony made about TV revenues being important, it's almost taken for granted that most of the money will still come without spectators. But curiously, if you look at, it's not the same across all sports. Like, I was listening yesterday about the MLB season resuming, in the baseball season.
Yeah.
And apparently 70% of the money comes from fan ticket sales, right?
Wow.
So that is like the opposite of every sport that you're hearing about. So not all sports are equal. I'm guessing it won't be, probably not 70-30, but even for the IPL, I think that ticket sales are a significant amount of money because I know the TV rights or whatever, $500 million or whatever per season, but it's still crazy to think of an IPL without fans. Like, it's basically the heart and soul of the game, right?
But in some senses, for these leagues, the opportunity cost is of not doing it at all. Right? So you'll readily take half the revenue. But I think it's slightly different for the Olympics, for instance, where Tokyo or the organizing country is going to suffer, right? Because none of the tourism will happen, but all of the infrastructure will need to be built or is already built. When it's a regular season thing, you can just plan much better and maybe, you know, call it off or defer it, etc. But for the Olympics, I think it's a unique thing, right? Where it's just a once in a lifetime thing. All of the money is spent up front and the opportunity cost, the dynamics there changes significantly.
Yeah, it's also that there were some murmurs about involving only local fans and stuff, but that is all like complete speculation of the states, because there was this report about cricket in Australia being played 5 tests at the Adelaide Oval with players staying within the stadium complex itself. So basically, like, we're still at a point in this too, in a country where things have been relatively better, which is Australia. So to think about fans seems like a really, really long shot at this point. You know, like, there's one other thing when football was trying to resume. So apparently for each game in the Bundesliga, you need 240 people involved, which means that's like a big number, right? So there are 22 players, there are some 12 subs or whatever, there are the coaches, there's some TV media. But for one actual football game to actually take place, you need a crew of 240 people working on it. I think it's around 190 that the Premier League is saying. But like, it's still insanely difficult to organize, to get together 240 people every weekend, especially when you know there are bigger problems at stake. And all these 240 people won't get tested twice a week like the players do, which means like, it's a big risk for 80% of the people attending a football game even today. So it's like very complicated morally to justify, you know, if you even consider that, okay, sports is just another industry, it also needs to survive, TV money needs to come in, whatever. But you can't put like 190 lives at risk just by testing once, because the players are getting tested twice before and after the games.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's actually something that a lot of people ignore, and a lot of opposition to sports restarting. And like, I've been following some of the media coverage about the Premier League, and there are people who are sports agnostics who are like, oh, this is just bored people trying to like get their favorite pastime going, and they are not concerned about the health and welfare of a lot of people, which is true. In a lot of cases, it is definitely true, where a lot of care is not being taken. But one must really not forget that any sport, really, any professional sport, isn't just restricted to those. The only athletes and the employees aren't the ones who are running out on the field. There are entire, not just support staff, but there are entire industries depending on sports working. Like, for example, some of the worst hit workers are people in the US, at least, and I was seeing this on John Oliver's show, was fast food vendors at big games, because in American sports, there's a lot of fast food consumed, and these guys are effectively, like, straight away have lost their jobs and their livelihoods entirely, because, I mean, it's not just that you could say that, okay, you can go back to your cart and start selling. It's just the sport has stopped, so their livelihood has stopped entirely. And, I mean, those from that to, I mean, other food vendors, other, like, transportation facilities, all of these facilities often depend on fans to, like, kind of fuel them. And stores, merchandise, all of that stuff is, like, completely stopped. And that's the ripple effect. And that's honestly just as much of a priority as it must be to restart other industries which are providing critical functions. Sport, too, is required because of the number of livelihoods it impacts.
Yeah. Just to go back slightly on something Tony mentioned earlier, like one group of people who've been affected disproportionately is some of the younger players, for example, academy players in football, to take one example. So they are basically progressing through age groups and they're losing like 1 year, which is like one big year at that stage of their career. For example, what if somebody is playing for the under-19s and he loses the whole development pathway, which is kind of getting extended into under-23s or whatever. So apart from just that, some of these guys will be the first to take the hit when clubs decide to do some sort of financial cost cutting or, shedding some of the other things that they do apart from the first team. I think at the Olympics, one of the things that they have done, not the Olympics, but the Olympic football competition, is you need to have a certain amount of players under 23 play in every team.
Yeah.
And because some of these guys were ready, I think now it's been made under 24. So some of this stuff might, you might see more rule changes coming across sports to accommodate people who've been affected disproportionately more than others.
Oh, yeah, that'll be fascinating. Like, think of that guy who was like turning 19 now because his parents had changed his birth certificate. But
Oh my God, yeah.
Yeah, just on the financials part, I think, like, even in the Premier League, Liverpool and Tottenham Hotspur, I read about they'd, like, furloughed their staff, etc. And the public outcry was swift, right? And the decision.
Yeah, and they had to, they reversed the decision quite quickly.
But sports is one area where this thing becomes very, gap becomes very apparent, except for the professional players. Almost everyone is earning, like,
peanuts.
And suddenly, an entire stream of it. If you look at the number of people that are affected, like you rightly said, it's a much larger number than just the sports figures. But on the audience front, right, there have been some interesting experiments. One which I heard on this very nice quiz show that has been going on called India Wants to Know. Shout out, check out their YouTube channel. Very nice. In Germany, apparently, they were selling 20 euro tickets to put your cutout in the stadium. So, since all the chairs are empty, you can buy a 20 euro ticket and you'll have your replica put in the stadium. I think somewhere they also tried a screen with Zoom on it, with like lots of people connecting via the audience, etc.
And they have also, I think, one of the smaller German clubs has been putting artificial fan noise through speakers.
Yeah, it happened yesterday in the Dortmund game also.
In the Dortmund game as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, so
that's like a laughter track to a sitcom, no? It's just like
effectively, yeah.
So, yeah, yeah. It's basically canned laughter, but canned booing also. Like, it's like really weird. So
no, I think that could be a whole. I see that as a long term play. I mean, you would. Simulating realistic crowd noise.
Yeah,
I think can be something that will become fairly mainstream, because again, you need the atmosphere, and in the long term, if fans are not going to be able to be there, you may not be able to see the fans, but you definitely want to hear them, right? Especially when you're watching the match and all, like, and it needs to be realistic. It can't be just canned, like, oh, it's generally just the noise is loud no matter what is happening. It needs to kind of like...
What they should do? They should just play that FIFA in the background, like with the crowd.
Yeah, but no, it also needs to, I mean, FIFA, but the players also need to like play exactly like the match is going on.
Yeah. Yeah, correct.
Because when the goal...
You can feed that as an input, right? The FIFA game works that way anyway. So based on the gameplay, you'll have appropriate noises made.
Yeah, but then... So that's what I mean. A lot of... in fact, funnily enough, I've one of the campaigns that I had followed, which won a Cannes several years ago. In fact, this was during the Arab Spring. At which point, this was in... Qatar or one of the other Arab countries, I forget. They had a football match which was could not be attended by fans because the government had imposed a curfew. It was a fairly critical football match for the team. And what they had done was they made an app or used an existing app where fans could, while watching the match on the TV, can press a button to increase the noise which would be played through speakers in the stadium.
Wow.
So the more the fans tapped the buttons, the louder the noise got. So when they would score a goal or when something would happen, there would be like loud noise coming there. And it was an entire case study. It was called The 12th Man, and there was an entire case study that was there.
I actually remember this, and I was also reading that the Premier League had like something similar in mind. I think there are like four noises you could make: whoop, clap, sing, and boo, or something like that.
And
people press one of the buttons, and the whole thing kind of feeds into the atmosphere of the ground.
Wow. No, but then this is also going to impact the dynamic, especially of. Association football is going to impact the dynamic of home and away as a Liverpool fan, what I will tremendously be I'm tremendously fearful of is the lack of the Anfield atmosphere. That's one of the key reasons why a lot of results have gone our way, is because just this huge intimidating atmosphere that's there for the visiting team. And that now is missing. So you're suddenly in a situation where people are... we are seeing this in the initial rounds of the Bundesliga, where I think in the last round of the Bundesliga, out of the 10 games, 8 games were won by visiting teams. Or they were drawn or something like that. So I think home advantage has become... the sample size is still pretty small, but home advantage seems to have disappeared quite a bit.
There was also this... counter argument about how it was the same before, but it's a very interesting thing to keep track of going forward, right?
Stats geeks can look into it. But one of the things, I think we've rambled on for nearly an hour and we should look to wind up. But one of the things in the reverse thing that will happen is while the audience at the stadiums are not there, maybe for fans at home, you'll have more like virtual reality experience, etc. Which brings us to the topic of what are the new business models that can emerge from the pandemic, like NASCAR, esports, online games. I think there are quite a few. Srinath, I think you were telling me before the show about a couple of companies or models that have emerged as a result of this pandemic.
I was busy reading about this app just now, which basically can... track how much contact two players have made or whatever. I don't know how short-lived it will be, but like absolutely unique business only because of COVID-19. So basically, like players in the training ground wear some sort of tracker, like they do, and this thing kind of traces how much contact with whom they've had and stuff. Might turn out to be absolutely pointless, but like one of the niche, very COVID specific things that is happening. The second thing that's happening is obviously esports has seen a massive boom, just like marble racing. There are more people on Twitch. People are generally doing that. I don't know if you guys have been following Charles Leclerc, the Formula One driver, playing Formula One, the game, the video game on YouTube, and they've been streaming. F1 has actually been doing a fabulous job. So he was playing with Ben Stokes and a bunch of other sports people. And Ben Stokes is basically cursing because he finished last on the race. And he was competing with Charles Leclerc. And Charles Leclerc, there's basically like a first-person camera that is shooting Charles Leclerc. And because the whole thing is played with a steering wheel and other Formula One equipment, it almost feels like his focus is almost like he's driving a real race, a real Formula One race. And this week, there was a really funny thing where his girlfriend had gone out and she forgot the key. And Charles Leclerc was busy driving. His girlfriend installed Twitch and commented on the stream saying, "Open the door."
Oh my God.
And then he went and opened the door, putting the game on pause. Wow. So absolutely random things are happening. Business models wise, just to answer the serious question, is that a lot of these sports streaming companies like DAZN in Europe and the Americas, which is DAZN. So they are a very unique model where they're dependent on live sports. And just like all of us, they didn't think there will be a period where there's absolutely no live sport. They've hedged all their bets. They've ensured that they have a liberal sprinkling of sports from across continents, across hemispheres. And suddenly there's absolutely nothing. And these guys are born out of a need to say, like, we hate this whole, not commoditization, this whole division of sports and geo-blocking across markets. We are going to kind of lead the revolution in the post-TV era. And we've gotten to a point where they're so out of funds that they're trying to get money and funding, and they're trying to even do an outright sale to a big broadcaster, whoever will buy them. So it's pretty sad in some ways that some of these business models are crumbling in the face of this pandemic. But yeah, I mean,
this
hopefully...
This will be the next sport, no? To see which big company is going to buy the smaller companies. Like, it'll be we'll create a sporting model out of it. Will it be Facebook, Amazon, or one of the other...
Google, places? Yeah.
We should create a league for it and put some money back into the sports economy.
Yeah, totally. So, like, the neighborhood store near where I am, was basically when I came in. So I came here right in the middle of the pandemic. So it had...
I don't think you said where here is.
Sorry, yeah. So I'm based in Lausanne in Switzerland. And when I came in, they were selling tickets to the local Swiss League or the whatever Premier League here. And by the time it was 4 weeks or 6 weeks in, all they had was tickets to the Belarusian League, which is the only one that soldiered on despite COVID-19 and said, like, this whole thing is a figment of imagination. So the Belarusian League soldiered on through the course of this pandemic. And all these shops were selling tickets for betting on those games alone. So that's the state of the betting.
But isn't there betting on marble race? I think that should be legit.
I'm sure that's already begun. Yeah, I mean, the bettors just need a outlet, right?
Yeah.
But then I think the point that you made about the Formula One driver playing against other sportsmen, I think that's in the Premier League also. There was the EPL, the Esports Premier League invitational tournament, which was actually quite well viewed. In fact, this was quite interesting to see how. So there were a couple of very close wins and stuff, and I was actually ended up following it because Trent Alexander-Arnold of Liverpool kind of made it all the way to the finals. In the semi-final, he beat Raheem Sterling over two legs, and all of these players were playing with their team. So Trent was playing with Liverpool, Raheem Sterling playing with Manchester City, And in the end, he kind of played against Diego Jota of Wolverhampton Wanderers, and who is himself quite an accomplished FIFA player. So this whole thing, and they were live streaming this. In fact, the semi-final and the final were streamed on Star Sports. So,
wow.
Yeah,
so this is where I think a lot of, I mean, this was probably only because of the lockdown, but the whole space about esports gaining traction as like mainstream sport is, because again, esports is the only sports that not going to be, I mean, even after the lockdown lifts, that has not been impacted during the lockdown, will continue as it was after the lockdown ends. So, while all the other sports will have this whole lack of fans, social distancing, some kind of changes in rules and stuff like that. So, I think esports is going to gain massive traction. I think there is going to be some kind of crossover between esports and regular sports, which will be a very interesting phenomenon to observe.
Yeah, interesting. Whether those skills will transfer onto the field. Or like, yeah, if someone who owns a gym will suddenly like break it into a team later.
I can see that very comfortably. I can see that very, the first sport I can see that very easily translating into is, of course, F1. Because, yeah, I mean, the race car drivers anyway drive these simulators, right? And are already, I mean, if you were to create, hook that simulator up to a game of some sort and have the other, or create a network where different players can simulate a game, a race against each other, you already have the interface and the drivers who are already used to the interface.
There are these cycling competitions also with what used to be called exercise bikes, but they're much more powerful now. There are these two big companies called, I think, Peloton and Zwift, which are the two big sort of exercise bikes. People are basically racing with each other because you have a screen where you see the whole actual course, and there are animated bicycles, and you're riding on it, and you're actually racing against real people. So it's almost like an integration of esports and the real world, and you actually physically exert yourself, unlike most other sports.
No, but for cycling to be realistic, they have to be doping also. Otherwise, there's no
point. Well played, Tony.
And in this case, I don't think the best cyclist may not have enough balls to share, if you get the reference.
Oh God!
You guys are peeking late into the show, man.
Correct. Yeah. We break.
I know,
man.
Anyway.
We pedaled on for enough. I think we should.
Yeah, but I think this is one of the most fun episodes, especially with sports, and having a sports conversation is always super fun for me. But this was really a
spin
great
off
conversation.
Into a sports addict support group till sport. Thank you so much, Srinath, for joining us. We will be in touch with you again at some
pleasure,
point.
Thanks
so
much. I'd love to be on a full house show with both Chuck and Naren also on. That'll be great.
Yes, whenever sports and our hosts return.
Yes. So, thank you so much, Srinath, again for joining us. We will be, Naren hopefully may join us for the next episode, which is unlikely considering we might record the next one right after this and he still has technical issues. But the one after that, maybe. So we will be back the next time. So in the meantime, in place of Naren, stay safe, stay relatively fit, I guess, and stay simplified. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.